All right, we're starting here on the bottom of Lamed Gimel and Bet by the Mishnah. Again, we're moving through each of the minim, and the first set of the items that are problematic with regards to that min are common to all of the different minim, and then it discusses those things that are unique to this min. So now we have Arava, Gzula, Vivesha, Psula. So that we've seen before, Gzula because of Lachem, Yivesha because of Hadar. That applies to all of the different minim, or v'zekeli v'anveu, according to Rashi, shelay shira v'shel irani dachai psula, because of ketute michtat shurei, it's as if it doesn't exist, because it has to be burnt. Niktam rosho, here with niktam rosho, you have the same problem we had back with the hadasim, which is that it can't be exactly what we discussed with lulav, because here niktam rosho is going to be different. Shumption is either that the top of the stem is picked off or popped off, or again, on the tops of the leaves have been split or taken off. Nifritzu aleha, the same thing with regards to nifritzu aleha, which Rashi had interpreted on the lulav to mean, oh, the leaves were ripped off and then bound back together. Obviously, by Ravot and Hadassim, that doesn't make any sense. There are those that want to suggest that it's all the leaves are taken off, put back on. But the Nifritzu aleha more likely here is that there's some sort of split in the leaves that causes them to be problematic. Tzaftzafa psula. Now this is a type of willow that we'll see that is problematic. Kimusha, if it's shriveled up. Vishinishru miktzatalea, or only a portion of the leaves have fallen off. Vishal baal kshera. And if it's from a field that is fed by rainwater, all of those are fine. Tanrabanan, arvei nachal. The term that the Torah uses for aravot is arvei nachal. A revolt that come from a stream or by a stream, by a river. Hagdelim alanachal, something that grows by the river. Davar acher, arvei nachal, she'ale shela mashuch kenachal, that its leaf is stretched out like a river, elongated, shaped like a river. Tanyidoch, we have another bright that says, arvei nachal, ein li elan arvei nachal, shel baal v'shel harim minayim. Arvei Nachal would suggest that it has to come from near a river, implying that if it came from a field that was watered by rain or from the mountain, it would not be okay. How do I know that it is? Talmud Omar, Arvei Nachal mikol makom. Rashi says, Lashon Rabim, then any time if a revolt are fine. Abba Shalom Er, Arvei Shtayim, Achat Lululav, V'chat Demikdash. Arvei is a plural, means two, a revolt. One is for the aravot to go into the lulav, and one is for the aravot that go in the mikdash, what we otherwise known as Hoshana Rabo, which is the Yom Arava, when they used to take the aravot, place the aravot around the mizbeach. Rabbanon the mikdash minolahu, where are the rabbanon? Meaning those that have the previous brayto, the darshan otherwise, how do they know that in the mikdash that we have aravot? Hilchata gemira lahu. Talocha the Moshe Misinai, which we're going to see right now, which is Dama Rabbi Asi, Am Rabbi Yochanan, Eser Nitiot, Arava, Benisu Chamayim, Halacha the Moshe Misinai. These three items are all Halacha the Moshe Misinai. They have nothing to do with each other. Rashi claims that they were all asked or said in the Beit Midrash at the same time, and therefore they're put together, similar to what we had before with Shiurim, Chatzitzim, and Mechitzot. There the Gemara pairs them together as Halacha the Moshe Misinai, and again Rashi says the same thing, that they were said together in the Beit Midrash, and that's why they're brought together, because they were spoken about in the same context, and that's how they're referenced over here. So it's over here. In terms of the aravot, it's what we're speaking about here, the aravot that they make kifet the mizbeach, they put on the mizbeach every day during Sukkot. Niso chamayim, which we'll get to later in the Masechta again, is the water libations that are brought every morning on Sukkot. Simchat Beit HaShoeva was drawing the water the previous night, and bringing it up, and then doing the Nisach HaMayim that morning. Eser Nitiot, happens to be we're going into a Shemitah year, and coming up to Pesach, so it's a little relevant now. But Eser Nitiot is a special din, that if you have 10 saplings that are evenly distributed on a Beitza'ah, Beitza'ah is 50 by 50 amot, so if you have these 10 saplings that are exactly equally distributed on that field, you'll have to plow the entire field for the benefit of those trees. Now, let's start a step back, which is, you have Shemitah. We have a mitzvah to be Mosif Michol al HaKodesh. That means that Shemitah starts before Shemitah starts. And they back up the Isur of Shemitah, not just from Shemitah, but even beforehand. But that's because we have a Charish, Shubakatzir, Tishbot. And then that Pasuk, there are a number of Drashot. One of the Drashot is that Charish Shel Erev Shvi'it. There is a requirement to have Charish stop, plowing stop, even before Shemitah starts. But Yochanan and Zakkai took that apart, and we plow to the last day before Shemitah. You'll see that here in the fields. around Beit Shemesh, they'll be plowing till before Rosh Hashanah. Because if they get it in the ground, then there's Sumech on the Chazon Ish, who says that anything that's a kume ilono, anything that's for the survival of the item is fine. And so if they get it in the ground before Shemitah, then they can keep working on it on Shemitah. So they will be plowing, you'll see plows and planting going crazy right before Shemitah. 3 days for Shtila. What's Misot Mosivim Michol HaLakodesh? Mosivim Michol HaLakodesh is 30 days. So Midoraita, if you have this drosha, then 30 days before Shemitah, you can no longer plow the fields. In addition to that, the Chachamim were gozer that from Pesach time, you cannot plow a stei lavan, which is a field of grain. And for a stei ilanot, you can't plow starting on Shavuot. Assumption being that the grain harvest takes place at Pesach time, and that the fruit harvest will take place around Shavuot, and that's the reason that the Omer is brought on Pesach, and the fruits, Bikurim, are brought on Shavuot. So therefore, the fields, the Dagan produce fields, you cannot plow starting from Pesach time. And the fruits, the trees, you cannot plow starting from Shavuot. The exception to that rule is if you have this field of saplings that have 10 saplings in them, then not only can you plow around those trees, but you can plow the entirety of the field. You can plow it as if it is a stei ilan, first of all, but number two is you have permission to plow all the way through till Rosh Hashanah. You're allowed to plow all the way till Rosh Hashanah. So even though deoraita, you have to stop or desist from plowing 30 days before, esenitiot, you can plow right up to Rosh Hashanah. As Rashi explains this, so that the fields and the trees won't go to the abesh or to waste. They need extra care because they're young saplings. And therefore, we give you permission to plow the entire field. That's Chazal's determination of what would help them if you plowed that field of a Beit Sa'ah around them. With older trees, the rule is that if you have 3 trees in a Beit Sa'ah, because they're much larger, their rooting is bigger. So then if you have 3 trees in a Beit Sa'ah, then you're allowed to plow that field all the way until Shavuot. It's not considered to be a stei lavan, but a stei ilan. It gets this category of stei ilan, and you can plow all the way till Shavuot. If they're not distributed in that way, then you can plow around the trees themselves, but not the greater field, because the field will already be asur from Pesach time. So when you have trees in certain formations, it allows you longer time to plow, because one, either it's classified as a stei ilan, that lets you go till Shavuot, or here, this special dispensation allows you to plow all the way until Rosh Hashanah with the Eser Nitiot. And that's Halacha LeMoshe MiSinai, that's being discussed over here. So the Chachamim say that it's Halacha LeMoshe MiSinai, this din of Arava and the Mikdash, as opposed to Abba Shaul, who learns it out of the Pasuk. Tosafot has an interesting, there's a number of interesting questions here. He says, based on the fact that they darshan certain things from Arvei Nachal, where do they learn out the other items? So for instance, Abba Shaul, who says that it's Achad Lulav, Achad the Mikdash, he says, where does he know that it's in the Mikdash? How does he know it's not in the Gvulin and in the Mikdash? Because the only way the Chachamim know it's in the Mikdash is because it's Halacha LeMoshe MiSinai. If he doesn't have the Halacha LeMoshe MiSinai, then how does he know that they do it in the Mikdash, not in the Gvulin? So either you have to say that he has a drusha that connects it to the latter half of the pasuk rather than the first half of the pasuk, or he has some halacha l'moshe misinai which is in the mikdash, but that not that the halacha l'moshe misinai tells him that that's the arava. More interesting thing that Tosafot notes over here is that if you believe that aravot here arve shtayim, which means 2 achat lulav achat mikdash, that means in the latter half of today's daf we're going to learn how many aravot you have to bring. So there's a machloket in the mishnah. One day is that you bring 2 aravot, which is what we do, our practice, Rabbi Shmuel. Why do you bring 2 aravot? Because arve nachal says it in plural. So now he says, wait a minute. If I have a limud here, arve teaching me shtayim, that means according to Abba Shaul, to learn shtayim for something else. That's number one. Number two is, he says, just before we had a limud from the Braita, that arve nachal came to teach me aravot in plural to say that even if it's not by a nachal, that it's okay. But if I use the arve to teach me that I need 2 aravot, that means I don't have that limud to tell me it can't be by a nachal. Therefore, Tosfot says, aravot have to come from a nachal, by a nachal. The only aravot that are kshirim are ones that you take from a river. If you take them from somewhere else, no good. Now Rashi terms it slightly differently. Rashi says, lichatchilo, they should be from a nachal. Bidiavad, you can take them from somewhere else, like the arim. But other rishonim say no, that arve nachal is not taken literally. You can have both drashot, they don't preclude each other. Just because you bring 2 aravot doesn't mean that arve nachal can also not mean that it doesn't have to be from a nachal in particular, it could be from anywhere. And therefore we paskin that arve nachal is not a description of location, but a description of the species that you need. So as long as that species exists, whether it's by a river or in a mountain or anywhere else, that's good, and that's the way we pass in Alocha, that the Aravot can come from anywhere, as long as they're the species of Arvei Nachal. Tarabanan, Arvei Nachal, Hagdelot, Ala Nachal. So that Arvei Nachal is something that grows by the river. Prat, Letzachtzafa, Hagdela, Ben Arim. So excluding this type of willow that grows in the mountains, that doesn't qualify. It's a different species, and therefore it does not qualify. Amar Vizera Maikara. Where's the pasuk that tells us it's a different species? It's not the same as Arvei Nachal. Because the pasuk in Yechezkel says, Kach al maim rabim, tzaf tzafa samo. Now, it's a very difficult translation of the pasuk, but the story in Yechezkel is that they have seeds that are being taken by the eagles and they're dropped, and then kach al maim rabim, they're dropped into large areas of water, and then tzaf tzafa samo. And then they put a tzaf tzafa, either it's planted or they grew a tzaf tzafa. The implications of the pasuk are that kach al maim rabim is one thing, and then tzaf tzafa samo is another thing. When the seeds were by the water, that was one thing, and then tzaf tzafa was a different species, that not by the water. And that would indicate to us that tzaf tzafa is something completely different. So Amar Leih Abaye v'Dilma Prushei Kamefarish, which is more likely the actually interpretation of the pasuk, which is maybe it's telling you what came out. Kach al-mayim rabim, that when it was placed by large water, then tzaf tzafa samot. What came out was a tzaf tzafa. What came out was a willow. So he says, kach al-mayim rabim, umay nihu. What is the thing that was, when you placed it by the water, that grew over there? That was a tzaf tzafa. Right, would undo the drusha that we just did. And Gemara says, imkein my samo. What's the word samo doing at the end there, which sounds like that's something else that was placed there, independent of what was placed on the water. This tzaf tzafa was planted independently. So the word samo gets in the way. And therefore, it cannot be an interpretation of what the first half of the pasuk was speaking about. Amar Ibo, this is totally independent. It's just a drusha on the pasuk, which is Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu Ani Amarti She Yisrael Lefanai Kikach Al Mayim Rabim. I said that the Jew should be like the willow that grows on the water. Umaynihu, and what is that? An arava. Vein somewhat zman kitzav tzafa shibarim. And instead, they made themselves like the willows of the mountains. What exactly that means, it's not so clear, but the assumption is that he said they should be by the water, which is that they would always be fed, they would always be garnering the presence of Hashem, and never go without water, and instead they put themselves in the mountains where it's not as close to the source of the water, and it's sometimes on, sometimes off. So that would be the maybe possible interpretation of what he suggests in this drasha. Ika dematni lo la haikro amatznito. Some want to suggest that this pasuk was brought on our breita, which is kach al maim rabim tzaf tzafa samo, that the breita itself, instead of before, we had the breita, and then we asked what was the pasuk. So Rabbi Zeira gave us the pasuk to explain what it was. Here instead, we have the attribution differently, which is the pasuk is brought by the breita, and then matrifla Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira challenges that, instead of Abaye challenging Rabbi Zeira, now Rabbi Zeira is challenging the breita and says, Dilma prushe kamefarish, kach amayim rabim. What is this kach amayim rabim? My niu tzaf tzafa. So Gemara says, imkein my samo. So then without attribution, the Gemara says, no, you can't say that because then you can't explain the word samo at the end of the pasuk. Alright. And then, Amar Rabbi Bo, we have the story of Rabbi Bo, which is, Amar Tili Yisrael, Shihu, Lifanai kikach amayim rabim. I said they should be like aravot that grow on the rivers. Umaynihu, that's the arava, the willow, behain somewhat zman, kitzasava shibarim, naming themselves like the willows of the mountains. Again, the context in Yechezkel is it's tochecha, it's a rebuke, and so therefore, in that context, Rabbi Bo is explaining the rebuke here of that pasuk. Tana banan, ezuhu arava, veezuhu tzavtzafa. What is the arava, and what is the tzavtzafa? Arava, kanesh shela adom, that its stalk is red. Ve'ale shela mashuch. And its leaf is elongated or drawn like a river, not round, but rather long and narrow. Upia chalak. And the edges of the leaf are smooth. Tzavtzafa, on the other hand, kane shela lavan. Its stalk is white. Ve'ale shela agul. And its leaf is round. Upia dome lemagal. And the edges of the leaf are similar to a sickle, which means it has serrated edges. Now, what's interesting here is Tosafot says, wait a minute, if I had the first three, why do I need the latter three? Once you told me what the character traits of an Arava are, then why are you telling me the character traits of a Tzavtzafa? By definition, a Tzavtzafa won't have those character traits because I have the three that make it into an Arava. Therefore, Tosafot says, the Gemara brought the second set of three to tell you that that's a tzapzifon, that's no good. By the arava, these are identifiers, but does not have to have all three in order to be kasher. If he has the other three, then you know it's a tzapzifon, it's no good. But the three, for sure, if you have them, then you have an arava. But even if you don't have all of them, if we know that it's an arava, then it's fine. So Tosafot loosens the requirements here, saying that you don't need all three in order for it to be an arava. That's gadel alamayim. V'ha tanya, domel magal is kasher. If it's similar to a sickle, then it's okay. Domel masar pasul. If it's similar to a saw, then it's pasul. Where Rashi describes the difference being that by a saw, the teeth are equal, meaning that they are triangles, that the serrated edge of a saw are triangles, and that are evenly sharp on both sides, because the saw goes back and forth, versus a sickle, which are tilted. The serrated edges are all facing in a single direction towards the handle, so that when you swing the sickle, it cuts whatever you are trying to swing at. So that's the difference in the serration. So here it says that if they're serrated like a magal, it's fine. If they're serrated like a saw, then it's problematic. That's with the round willow. So here you see, and this is what proves what Tosafot is saying, is from there you would conclude that this round willow is kosher for Hoshana. That's what Tosafot says before, that obviously it doesn't have all the other three requirements. Otherwise, why would it have to tell us that this chilfagilo is kosher? And that's what it means, that the requirements are looser. If we know that it's Hoshana that grows on the river, it's an arava that grows on the river, that would be fine. And this chilfagilo qualifies as being not, it's not a tzapzifa. It's obviously a different species, but a species that's considered to be part of the arava family. And therefore, you can utilize it even though it has serrated edges, because it's called a chilfagilo and not a tzapzifa. And so that's also its proof that you don't need all three requirements, because here you have something with a serrated edge, and which we are saying is kasher. Pshita, the Gemara says, of course. Well, why wouldn't you think it's good for an arava? Because it has a qualifying name. It's not just called an arava. It's called chilfagilo. It's called the round willow. So maybe there it would not qualify. Lo nitkasher kamash malon, that it's okay. The Gemara says, okay, why don't we say that's right. It has a shem levai, it's problematic. Gemara says, arvei nachal amarachmano mikol makom. Avei Nachal means anything. Anything that's that species, even though it's not growing necessarily on the rivers, but any arava is qualified as long as it's in that family of the aravot. I just make a note here. Somebody wrote, there's a very interesting article that was written with regards to the Arbat Aminim, that the Arbat Aminim, and why it would may be important that the aravot come from the Arvei Nachal, is because we know that Sukkot, we have the Nisuch HaMayim. Gemara and Rosh Hashanah tells us that the Sukkot Nidonim Alamayim, that's the time period where Hashem judges us for water, therefore we bring the Nisuch HaMayim. And it's the time right before the rainy season where we're davening for rain. That's when we begin to say, Mashiva Ruach, Homorido Goshem. That's literally after that. We're not for certain issues. We would have said, Tein Dalamoto Libracha as well. We postpone it a little bit. But that's when we begin to talk about the rainy season. And therefore, if you look at the Arba Minim relate to the four different types of water sources inside of Eretz Yisrael. And that you have water that's things that come from rain, things that come from the Nachalot, and other things that grow by the mountain streams. And there might be why the Gemara here is focused on the Arvei Nachal coming from a Nachal. Because if you do that, each one of these items grows in a different way from a different one of the, I think it's the three or four water sources inside of Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, the Aravot coming from the Nachal is significant, because it represents one of those water sources within Eretz Yisrael. And that's why the Gemara might be focused on Arvei Nachal and Nachal. Why is it so important? Why does it matter that it's a Nachal? Because that's part of the message of the Arbat Aminim, is that they represent the different water sources, and that we're davening for the water in the upcoming year. It's important to have each one of the Minim represent one of those water sources. And that's why the Arvei Nachal, there's so much focus on this issue of Nachal and where it grows, because obviously the Aravot focus on Nachal, the rivers inside of Eretz Yisrael. Amar Rav Chista. Hanei Tlatz Milei, Ishtanei Shemayu, Michichara Beit HaMikdash. These three items, their names were changed after the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. Meaning that in the colloquial speak, they were known as one thing before the Churban HaBayit, and after the Churban HaBayit, they changed. Not necessarily related to Churban HaBayit. I think they're just using that as a demarcator, a marker as to when, around when it changed. It says, Chalfata Aravta, Aravta Chalfata, that the Chalfata, which is this Tzapzifa, and the Arava got their names mixed up. They got changed. So what was known as the Tzapzifa before and Arava before the Churban HaBayit is now known the opposite way around. So somebody tells you it's an Arava, they're talking about the equivalent of what was the Tzapzifa before. And the Chalfata now is actually the real Arava that we're looking for. So even though it's not called an Arava anymore, that is what we're looking for, despite the fact that the name changed. My nafkamina, what's the nafkamina, what the name is, obviously for lulav, because we need to know which one is the Arava, the proper Arava to use for the lulav. Right, next thing is Shipura, Chatzotstra, Bechotzotstra, Shipura, Shofar, and Chatzotzrot, also their names got changed. Before, Korban HaBayit, Shofar was curved, and at Chatzotzrot, where trumpets were straight. After Korban HaBayit, it changed around, and the Chatzotzrot were bent, and the Shipura were known as something that was straight. My Nafkamina, what's the Nafkamina? It's the Shofar Shel Rosh Hashanah. Shofar Shel Rosh Hashanah needs to be Kafuf, which we'll learn in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, that it's kafuf, so people should have the message of the shofar that people should be bent and they should be machni on themselves lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the shofar is the bent one, even though it's called a chatzotzrot now. That's the one that is the shofar. Patorta, patora, patora, patorta. So these, patora is a table. So here the Gemara has a name for a big table and a small table. And they changed the names around. What used to be known as the big table is now the small table, and the small table is the big table. The Mai Nafkamina, why does that matter? The Makach U'Memkar. You go to the store and you're buying something, that when you use the word, one of them is going to be big table, one's going to be small table. So they're reversed now. They're different. And you have to know, if somebody says the word now, it doesn't mean what it used to mean. It means something else now. All right, by Afani Omer, Bekasi Uvlila, Uvlila Bekasi. Right, this is really related to Chulin, and there we spend a lot of time on this. But the Bekasi, which is Beit HaKosot, and the Uvlila, which is the Hamseis, these are the different stomachs of the ruminants. So the Bekasi, or Beit HaKosot, is the second one, or the one at the end, and the Uvlila is the first stomach of the ruminants. And there's a difference, halachically, between them. Now they get switched to be Uvlila and Bekasi. My Nafkamino, what's the difference? The Machad HaNimtza Be'ovi Beit HaKosot, for a needle that's found in the wall, or the lining of the Beit HaKosot. See, Rashi and Tosafot deal with it. I don't want to get too deep into this. It's really trefot issues. But if the lining of the walls of the stomach are punctured, then the animal is a trefa. The Beit HaKosot have a thicker lining around them. The wall is thick, which is actually made up of two membranes, and then probably fat or something in between them. So by the Beit HaKosot, if the needle punctures one of the walls, the other wall is there to protect it. That's one possibility. Tosafot talks about the fact that the Beit HaKosot, the Hamseis, the other stomach might actually sit over it. So even if it's punctured fully, that the other stomach might sit and cover it and seal the hole up so there's no hole there. So that's a discussion in Chulin. It's not as important to us here. But because of that, the Beit HaKosot, if you find the needle there, depending what you find, you can be more makil. If you find it embedded in the wall, or possibly, according to Joseph, the wall has a hole in it, that it might be okay. It may not be a trefa because it's covered by the other stomach. On the other hand, the Hamseis has a much thinner wall. And if it's punctured at all, we assume it punctured all the way through because it's too thin at that point, then it definitely went through. Or, again, if it went all the way through, for sure it's a trefa because there's nothing that covers it. So now when they changed the names from Uvlila to Bekase, the nafkamina is when you find the needle there because it makes a difference what it's called. So you have to know that what they, Beit HaKosot, what was the original Beit HaKosot is now called the Uvlila. And what was originally Uvlila is called the Beit HaKosot. So if they tell you the Beit HaKosot now, if you find a needle in that, it's a trefa. Because that's the original Huvlila, which, or the Hamseis, which is problematic. Amar Rava Bar Yosef Afani Omer, Bavel, Borsif, Borsif, Bavel. So he says the name Bavel got changed to Borsif, and Borsif got changed to Bavel, the Mai Nafkamina. What's the difference, what it's called? So Nafkamina, the Gitei Nashim. It makes a difference for the Gitim of Nashim. The way Rashi explains it over here is that there's a rule in the Gemara and Gitin that a get must be written Lishma. That's number one. And number two is, we need it to be verifiable. That it's easily verifiable. Because of that, there's a requirement if a get is brought from outside of Eretz Yisrael, the Edim that bring it have to say, B'fanay nechtav, B'fanay nechtam. It was written in front of me, and it was signed in front of me. It's machloket there, is that because he can say that it was done lishma, or is that because he can now verify the get? So we don't need the Edim there, because he can verify the signatures of the Edim, and he can uphold the get. So that's the machloket there. The Gemara there says in Eretz Yisrael they were b'kiyim lishma. Outside of Eretz Yisrael they were not b'kiyim lishma. The additional item the Gemara says is Bavel. Bavel, because there were yeshivot there and Talmidei Chachamim there, they're also experts at lishma. So gitim that kind of out of Bavel do not have that requirement of b'fanei achtam. They have the same din as Eretz Yisrael. So now it makes a difference where Bavel is. Because Bavel is determined to be a location where a get does not have the requirement of b'fanei achtam. On the other hand, Borsif was an area of Amei Aretz. So which one is which is important. So the Gemara says the name switched. So what's called Bavel now is not really the original Bavel. That's where all the Amei Aretz lived. And there you would need to have verification. You would have to have Bafanei Nechtam. On the hand, Bersif, which is now called Bersif, originally was Bavel, that place is Lishma, and you do not need an additional verification for that location. All right, Rashi, in a different context, says that it has to do with Lishma or Lishma. That when you write in the get, you have to write the location of the individuals. You have to write the man's name, the woman's name, and where they're from, the city in which they're from, in order to easily identify them. So he said that's what the Bavel and Bersif are. Tosfot mentions it here, but he also mentions it over there. That means that Bavel cannot be talking about the country, but Bavel must have been a specific location, much narrow location. Can't say, oh, it's Khana from Bavel. I mean, what does that tell you about her? That's too wide a swath of area in order to be meaningful. It has to give her a city. So Tosfot proves from that that there's also a place called Bavel, a narrower, smaller area that's called Bavel, which isn't a large country.
New York.
Right, exactly, like New York. All right, next Mishnah. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Shlosha Hadasim, Ushte Aravot, Lulav Echad, Vetrog Echad. Rabbi Shmuel says, and this is our practice, that you can have 3 Hadasim, 2 Aravot, 1 Lulav, and 1 Etrog. That's what you bring in terms of your Arbat Aminim. Ve'afilu Shnaim Kdumim, Ve'charenu Katum. That's even if 2 of them have a problem, and 1 is not problematic. 2 of them have their tops popped off, and 1 of them does not. Gemara will ask, what does that mean? Obviously, you're talking about Hadassim, because it's the only one that has 3 that it's meaningful in. Gemara is going to say, Mimonov Shach. If he requires 3, then all 3 need to be kosher. If he only requires 1, then why should he require 3? There should be 1 there. Hey, Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Afilu Shloshtan Kitumim. Rabbi Tarfon says, even all 3 of them have their tops popped off, you're fine. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Kashem Shalulav Echad Vetrog Echad. Just like Lulav is 1, Etrog's 1, Kachadas Varavachat. So too, that the Sim and the Revolt, you only need 1 of each. Tanya, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Pri Eitz Hadar, Echad, Kapot Tmarim, Echad, Anaf Eitz Avot, Shlosha, Arvei Nachal, Shtayim. Alright, so let's go through these. Pri Eitz Hadar, that's written in the singular, so that's fine. Kapot Tmarim, we already discussed, even though it's written in plural, it's Chaser. So the kapot is really kapat tamarim, and therefore it's echad. Anaf eats avot. It's clear that it's in plural in some sense, but not clear that you should have 3. Rashi claims it's anaf eats avot. Each one of them includes 1 additional item. Although Tosfot questions that and says, then why don't we say pre eats hadar and say the same thing by the etrog? And he tries to wiggle out of it, but that's where Rashi says anaf eats avot is 3. Arvei Nachal is plural, and the minimum of a plural is 2, so that's how we get Shtayim. Now again, he says, Afilu Shnayim Tumim Ve'Chad Sheinu Katum. Rabbi Tarfon Omer Shlosha, Ve'Afilu Shloshtam Tumim, you need 3, and even if all 3 of them have their tops popped off. Kiva Omer, Kishem Shalua Ve'Chad, Ve'Chog Echad, Kachadas Ve'Rava Achad. So the Braita is very similar to our Mishnah, it just adds in the additional Limudim that we had by Rabbi Shmuel. Amar Lo Rabbi Eliezer, Yechol Yehei Etrog Yimahen Be'Aguda Achad. You would think that the etrog is included. You have 4 minim. Why don't you have to put them all together? Now, not necessarily that you have to bind them, because chachamim say you don't have to have an eged. But do you have to put them all together in one single grouping? Or are the lulav, hadas, and arvas separate, and the etrog separate? Amar, t'vchinem ar priyetz adar v'kapot marim. You have to look carefully at the pasuk. The pasuk does not have a vav chibur between priyetz adar and kapot marim. Halo lo ne'emar ela kapot. So you look in the pasuk, it says priyetz adar. Kapot marim. Then it continues with vanaf eitz avot ve'arvei nachal. So the vav chibur includes the latter 3 of the minim and not the pre eitz adar. So based on that, Rabbi Eliezer says the pre eitz adar, the etrog stands alone, and the other 3 minim are brought together, are bound together, held together in one hand. So therefore, you hold those 3 minim in one hand and the etrog in the other hand. So you don't hold them all together. Or according to Rabbi Huda, if you bind them, you don't have to bind the etrog as part of the other 3 minim because the etrog stands independently. How do you know that one is ma'akev the other? I mean that you need all 4 minim. You can't just take one of the minim and be yotze. Tamalomar, ulekachtem, she'et ulekicha tama. That you have to take. Ulekachtem, they read as lakach tama. So that means it has to be a whole taking. What's the whole taking here? That you take them all at once. That's the way the Rabbeinu Tam reads this. We discussed this earlier in the Masechta, the Machloket Rishonim, with regards to lekicha tama. Rabbeinu Tam says, L'kicha tamah means you must take all 4 of them together. And that's what means that you're ma'akev. You need to take all 4 of them. Eged, you don't need an eged. You don't have to be bound together. You just have to take all 4 of them together. So there's a requirement of L'kicha tamah. There's no requirement of eged. The Bahag And many of the Rishonim afterwards, and I showed you that we paskin this way, the Shulchan Aruch paskins this way, the Kichat Tama just says that I have to have all four minim available to me together, do not have to take all four of them together at the same time. That's what it means. You don't need an egget on the lulav. That means that you don't have to take all four of them in one shot. You can take them one by one. You can have them all sitting in front of you and take one, put down, put take the next one and put it down, and that's fine. That's what the Kichat. The Kichat Tama is just a definition that you have all four of them together, not a definition of taking them absolutely together. Again, it's machloket Rishonim. And we said again, the Shulchan Aruch, the Ma'ol Paskin, can take them one at a time, as long as you have them all available. Question if they have to be right in front of you, or if they're in the house, that's enough. And then we had the question, which is, if it comes from the Kachdim, does that only apply to Yom HaRishon? What happens after Yom HaRishon? According to most Rishonim, we saw the Tosfot earlier in the Perek, that the Kachdim applies to all the days, and you have to take them all. There were Rishonim, the one that says yes, that the requirement to take all four Minim was only on the first day. On the other days, you could possibly take them individually. Right, Rabbi Shmuel, Monof Shach. The Gemara wants to understand Rabbi Shmuel's opinion. Shleimim bayi libayi nami kulu. If he requires shleimim, then all three of them should have to be shleimim. Lo bayi shleimim. If he doesn't require shleimim, afilu chad nami. Lo. Then why does he need one? Hey, make up your mind. Either you're like Rabbi Tarfon, who says you don't need shleimim, so you take three that are nikdam, it's fine. Or if you require shleimim, then all three of them. What's this business that you take three, then two of them don't have to be? So on and so forth. Amar biri, amar Rabbi Ami, chazer bo Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel retracted his position. He originally said you needed three, and then he retracts his position and says you only need one. And that's what his retraction was, that you need one. Amar Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Alocha ki Rabbi Tarfon. The Alocha is like Rabbi Tarfon, that you need, well, first of all, you need three, but you can have three that are niktam. So, as the Shmuel etameh, and this is Shmuel eshitato, Damalu Shmuel ahanu demizavnei asa, said to those people that are selling hadasim, Ashvu uzvinu, make it a fair price when you're selling them. Ilo drish lochuk Rabbi Tarfon. Otherwise, I'm going to doresh like Rabbi Tarfon. I'm going to pass him like, which he did. He passed him like Rabbi Tarfon. But he told them, if you don't, I'm going to make it clear that the loch is like Rabbi Tarfon. They don't need his perfect hadasim. So my time. Ilima mishum de mekel. If it's because he's mekel, velidrosh lochuk Rabbi Akiva. You want to really be mekel, then pass him like Rabbi Akiva. That's only one hadas. De mekel today. He's even more mekel. So why is he threatening them with Rabbi Tarfon? And you should threaten them with Rabbi Akiva. So the answer is because Paskin's like Rabbi Tarfon. That's the proof that Shmuel holds like Rabbi Tarfon. The Gemara says that's not true. So Tlatik Tume Shchichei Had Velo Kotem Lo Shchiach. He says that no, Rabbi Tarfon's more Mekil. Because Rabbi Tarfon says you have three of the same whose tops are cut off. It's easier to find three problematic Hadassim than there is to find one kosher Hadass. And therefore it was more Mekil to be like Rabbi Tarfon. And even though Shmuel thought the Loch was like Rabbi Tarfon, the reason he didn't Paskin explicitly that Rabbi Tarfon was because he did believe that there was a Hidur aspect in having them be Shaleim and good Hadassim, not Nikdam Rosho. So therefore, he didn't make that Bidiyavad as the primary Psak Halacha. He just threatened the Mokrim if they didn't hold the price down and make it reasonable for people to buy them, then he would bring out the Psak Halacha, the Ikar Psak Halacha, that they are Kshirim, even if Nikdam Rosho. Right, now, Tosafot speaks about the question that you raised, Fred, about having more than one of these items. And he says here that, if you look in the Tosafot, Arvei Nachal Shtayim, Afilo notein kama hadasim bekama ravot bululav, ein ze bal tosif. That's not a problem about tosif. You can exceed the number. These are minimum requirements, not maximum requirements. Minimum requirement is to have two aravot and to have three hadasim. He says, if you add on more, that's not bal tosif. Afilu l'man damar tzarech eged. Even according to Yehuda, says it's an eged, it's not a problem. Elein gim mosif min acher. It's only called bal tosif when you add a different min. It's as long as it's along the lines of the same min, that is not considered to be excessive or bal tosif. And you can add on. These are minimums, not maximum requirements. So therefore, you can add on. Our minhog is, despite that fact, our minhog is only to put in two aravot and three hadasim. Even though technically min halacha, you could add on more. The chatchila, we tried to do it like Rabbi Shmuel suggests, because of the meanings of the numbers of the minim, therefore we are makri to do that, but there is no, the Shulchan Aruch, the way the paskin is that you can add on as many as you want, there is no maximum limit as to how many hadassim or aravot that you have. So you see in Eretz Yisrael, many people, especially the Sephardim, who have a lulav, which tons and tons of hadassim wrapped around it, because of this. Is that there is no problem here about Tosif as long as you have the min there and you meet the minimum requirement. They're not a hefsek because it's the same min. And if one does add minim, it should only be for Zeke Levan Vehu, which is to enhance or beautify the lulav. And for that reason, some of the Rishonim believe that this is only true with regards to the hadassim, which are beautifying of the lulav, and there are those that also suggest that it could be the hadassim, the aravot, but nobody believes that you can add on to a lulav or a etrog when it comes to the mitzvah of the arbata minim. All right, we'll finish up the mission, and then we'll continue with the Gemara tomorrow. Etrog gazol v'yavesh pasol. Again, the same as all the others, that if it's stolen or dried out, it's problematic. Shel hashivav, shel nidachat pasol. Now, things that are unique to etrog. Shel orla pasol. Shel shumat me'ah pasol. Orla, which you cannot eat, and you cannot get enough from, that orla is pasol. Shumat me'ah is the same thing. You can't eat it, and you can't get any benefit from it. Therefore, they are no good to be used for an etrog. These apply by etrog, because etrog is the only fruit item that you have here. Since it's the only fruit item, it's the only item that has any issues with regards to trumot, masrot, orla, all of these things. Truthfully, it's probably the only thing that has a problem with regards to Shemitah as well. Coming into a Shemitah year, etrog is the major issue with regards to Shemitah. This year will not be as much of an issue because they try to pick them before Shemitah, because the machloket about the din of etrog as a din of a fruit or a din of a vegetable, and when Shemitah is determined for it. Therefore, with regards to etrog, they just try to pick them before Rosh Hashanah, because within 2 weeks they're fine. Lulav, some people are choshesh v'shita that lulav can be problem mayadik on Shemitah, but based on our Gemara, it's pretty clear that the lulavim are in general not a problem of Shemitah, because they're not a vegetable, they're not a vegetation, therefore they don't have a din of Shemitah. We're choshesh because of some deot for that, but generally they're not really an issue of Shemitah. Vegetables, when you pick them, determines the year. So etrog, we'll see later on in the Masechta, is a machloket, whether it has a din of a vegetable or a din of a fruit. Right, shel truma to'orah lo yitol. Truma to'orah you should not take. V'im natal kasher. If you take it, it is kasher, even though you can't eat it. But a kohen could possibly eat it, so that might make it okay. Shel demai. Demai is something that was bought from an alma aretz. It's a fake if trumot demasro were taken off of it. Then beit shemai puslim u'beit hillel machshirim. So machloket we see all over Shas between beit shemai and beit hillel, which is, can you give demai to, first of all, aniyim, to the poor people? So the answer, Beit Hillel says you can give a demai to the poor people. Beit Shammai says no. Since you can give it to a poor person, technically anybody can make themselves poor by disowning or disfranchising themselves from any of all their property. And by doing that, then they would be poor and they could use the demai. So there's a technicality that would allow you to use it in this case. So Maisha Sheni B'Yerushalayim Lo Yitol. Maisha Sheni, which is edible in Yerushalayim, you should not take. V'im Natal Kasher. But if you do take it, it works. Alta Chazazit Arubo. If you have chazazit, chazazit is these bumps, these little bumps or boils that come up on the etrog. If it's on the roof of it, it's problematic. And the minority we'll see is fine. Nitna pitamto, if it's pitam, as we know it, is taken, then it's pasul. Niklaf, if it's peeled. Or nizdak, it's cracked. Nikev, if it's punctured, vichasar koshu, but it has to be missing. The puncture has to have caused a loss or something missing from the etrog. Pasul. That is pasul. Alta chazizita miuto, if you have these bumps only on a minority of it. Natal ukso, on the other side, the opposite to pitom, the part where it was attached to the tree, if that's missing, as long as it's not missing anything from the etrog, that is fine. Nike velo chazir koshu, if there's a puncture, but it's not missing anything, meaning that it just pressed in the etrog, it didn't cause a loss or change in anything in the etrog, kasher. Etrog akushi pasul. Etrog, which is a black etrog, is considered to be pasul. Ariyarok, tikarti. If it's, loosely I'll translate this as green, kikarti, Rabbi Meir makshir, Rabbi Yehuda pusel, and Rabbi Meir says it's fine, Rabbi Yehuda says it's pasul. Tosafot back on Lamed Aleph, when we discussed this earlier, tries to discuss what the color of karti is. He's unsure as to what karti is, and he gives a number of options as to what exactly this karti is. And it's interesting because he uses words that we know, and he talks about it being possibly a yellow or a darker green. And he favors the interpretation that it's a yellow. And that happens to be true in the Gemara in general, that you're rock. And the Gemara is more of a yellowish than a greenish tint. It's like a yellowish green. Right, you're rock. With the Gemara that says, Esther, you're rock haita, is not that she was green, but rather that she had a yellowish complexion to her. So he says here, Yeroka karti, it doesn't say, mashma shemar ehu, kitseva shikorim veered, which would be more like red. On the side it says, nusach acher, green. So that it was a greenish color. And then Tosfot says that it sounds like that from the Yushalmi because it's this tseva of green, keina savim, like the herbs and the grasses that are out there. But then he brings that it's mashman de yarok nami lechelmon shel beitza. It's like the yellow yolk of an egg. Shukain tseva yellow, belaz. That's more like yellow. And so Tosafot over here sounds, he says, he says that the Gemara in other places talks about it having a reddish complexion as well. He says the only thing that would match yellow has a complexion that matches with red. Green, there's no red mixed in it. On the other hand, yellow has some reddish complexion that's mixed into it. And therefore, he says that that would be the right explanation here, that it is a yellow. Which is interesting that he's saying here that the Yarok Karti is a form of yellow, because obviously all of our Etrugim are yellow.
Or green.
Or green too, right. That's another issue, which is that our Etrugim are green. Why are our Etrugim green? So that we discussed in the past a little bit. Number one is, if the Etrog is green and had it been left on the tree or put into water, it would turn yellow after the fact. Like any fruit that ripens off the tree, you can pick a clementine that's green and then you leave it, it will turn orange afterwards because it ripens off the tree. So too, an Etrog, if it's green, if it will ripen off the tree, that would be fine. Because that means it is yellow, just that it hasn't reached that point of being yellow, and it's reached the point of maturity, where it's far enough along that's considered to be mature and not immature. It's ripened and just needs to change the color. First of all, that's brought down the halacha, that is totally fine. I mean, you should prefer one that's yellow, but if you have this, then it would turn yellow, then we don't have a problem. So any of those that are yellowish green or yellow and green already, then you know that it's going to turn fully yellow. If you just leave it, that will be fine. The bigger issue is that they sell many of these, what they call Teimani Etrogim, which are Etrogim that are completely green. So there, that is a little bit more problematic, because when they're completely green, the Gemara says that Yarok Karti is problematic. Now, back there we said that Rav Yehuda says the reason Yarok Karti is problematic is because it's evidence of it being immature. It hasn't ripened yet. So the answer, or the reason that people say that they're okay, is because that's the way that they grow. These Etrogim are not green because they're immature. They're green because that is their natural color. And that's why in Teiman they had green Etrogim trees, and they used green Etrogim. That's why it's called the Teimani Etrog. It's because of that, because their full-grown Etrogim remain green. Even in their ripened state, they're green. Therefore, they say that it's okay. Or there are people who are makbid not to get those green ones, but to get the yellow ones because of this. But the heter derives from this fact that those green Etrogim are considered to be fully grown Etrogim, and that is going to be their final state. They will not mature beyond this. They're not going to turn yellow at any point. And that's why they might be Ksherim. Although again, Tosafot leans heavily towards Yarok Karti being a yellowish type of color rather than a green color. And that might make sense if you think that that is a sign of immaturity. Because that would be more like a lime green. If you look at a lime green, then in that green form, that would be a sign of immaturity rather than a deeper dark green, which would be a finished product of an etrog that remained green even after the fact. So that might be what Tosafot is referring to there, which is that yellowish green tint, which has a more of a lime type of color. Shir Etrog HaKatan, we saw this again back on Lamed Aleph Amud Bet, like we saw the other things. The smallest, the minimum size of an etrog, Rabbi Meir Omer Kegulz, it's the size of a nut, whether it's a walnut or a nut of some sort. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Kebeitza, obviously a larger size, the size of an egg. Ubegadol, what's the maximum size of an etrog? Kadei Sheyachol Shnayim Biyado, Dibir Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says you can hold two in your hand. We saw back on Lamed Aleph the reason he gives over there, not because of Hadar, but rather because we're afraid you're going to drop it. If you pick it up in the wrong hand, and you have to have your lulav in one hand, the etrog in the other hand, you got it backwards, how do you switch hands? The only way to switch hands without putting it down would be if you can hold two etrogim in one hand. That means you have enough space to hold both of them in a single hand, and then you can exchange them and switch them over. By the way, this is also evidence of the fact that the proper way to carry a lulav and etrog is in two hands. Not to have it, many people carry the lulav and the etrog in a single hand, that's not proper. The way to carry them is that, for righties, the right hand has the lulav and the other two minim, the das nerabah, and the left hand has the etrog. And that's why they have these little cards or sheets when you do an oshana, when you do an halal, so you can keep it held that way, and you can still do the oshana. If you hold your sitter in the other hand and hold them together in one hand, that's not necessarily the best way to hold the lulav and etrog in a single hand, aside from the fact that you could lose your etrog in that way. But leaving that aside, the best way to hold them is separately in each hand. Then we have Rabbi Yossi's opinion, who we paskin like, is Omer afilu chad b'shtei yadav. You can have even an etrog the size that it's one etrog, takes two hands to hold. There is no maximum size for an etrog. It can be as big as you please. That is the size of the etrog that you have. All right, we will stop over here.